It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And we'd like to welcome Cecil Harvell from Harvell and Collins on the phone line with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, Mike?
Wonderful. Getting ready for the winter weather this at the end of this week. So always about planning, Cecil.
Yes.
Life is about
yes.
planning. So getting ready for that.
Yep. Well, speaking about planning, last week we talked about guardianship filings in the state of North Carolina and how these matters many times evolve. And I'd like to continue to talk about that today. And it's interesting that you bring up the word planning because, unfortunately, Mike, in the guardianship arena, sometimes folks have planned. They have, in effect, a power of attorney. They might even have a up-to-date and very detailed power of attorney, which is, of course, what any power of attorney now needs to be. Basically, a power of attorney is a grant of authority to another person to handle one's financial affairs if, for some reason, one is unable to do so. And it's important that these documents have particularity in them now in the world in which we live and operate, because banks and stock companies and Department of Motor Vehicles and the list goes on, they aren't going to honor the power of attorney unless it very specifically grants an authority to the agent to be able to act. Now, with that said, even though we have a power of attorney and we have been and we are, quote, well-planned, sometimes our loved one, for whatever the reason might be, is unable to cooperate with us. And they leave a facility and wander out in the night or the afternoon. They reject the actions of the agent, many times the agent being, as one would expect, their child or loved one. They don't cooperate with the child and loved one as to their medications, as to their financial decisions. And so the agent under the power of attorney, even though, again, I'm trying to lay the foundation here, Mike, even though we are well-planned, the agent under the power of attorney is unable to control the principal, unable to manage the affairs and the person of the principal because they just simply aren't cooperating. And so some of our listeners are beginning to have experienced this, and they're beginning to say, ah, yes. So this is the situation where if you don't have a court order of guardianship, you're not able to keep your loved one in a facility. Say, for instance, a memory care unit.
Sure.
or something of that nature. Maybe you make a financial decision and then they undo the financial decision. Maybe you make a financial decision, but notwithstanding that, they still are being taken advantage of by some scam or other sort of internet fraud or telephone fraud, so much of which, as we all know, is happening now. I mean, we have a mother that her daughter and she communicate. They are in a good place with each other, and the daughter has a good power of attorney, well drafted. And yet the mother, notwithstanding conversation after conversation with her daughter about how she is being defrauded over the telephone by a particular scam artist and over the internet, the bottom line is that the principal or the elder lady is still subject to those influences and has written checks and lost money, even though the daughter is her power of attorney. So in that file, unfortunately, that's the kind of file where we are going to need an order from the court so as to be able to really lock down the assets of the mother. Always these orders from the court, Mike, the assets and the dignity of the individual is still prevalent, still exists. The assets are still the mother's. It's just that she is not going to have any control over them at this point because there has been an order of guardianship. And also with the same with being in a facility for our loved ones who wander and will not stay in a facility. Again, you know, we're going to do everything that we can, as will the facility, to maintain their dignity and their individuality and those kinds of issues. But the bottom line is that they really, the facility now really will have permission to not allow the person to leave. Without the order of guardianship, Mike, the person can just simply say, even though the facility knows that it's not in their best interest, they can say, look, I absolutely am going to leave. I'm going to get a taxi. I'm going to get an Uber. Some other friend or neighbor is coming to get me. I'm going out and I'm walking away from the facility. We've had all of those circumstances. And of course, that's not in their best interest. And therefore, then we're in a situation where we need an order of the court.
Yeah, it's interesting. We use it in the context of being in a facility, a nursing home of sorts. But the same scenario could play out with the individual, the principal living by themselves, and the agent living close by, and wandering around too. But if they were under a guardianship, wandering around their home, and a law enforcement officer saw them, and they were under guardianship, they could then take them back for their own protection, back to their dwelling, their domicile. Correct.
That's correct.
Without the person is just allowed to walk the streets like anybody else. Without that,
correct.
Their guardianship. Okay.
Yeah, correct.
Just to make that clear. That's okay. So that's interesting. Continue, please, Cecil.
Yeah. I mean, you're beginning to hear, Mike, and all, and our listeners are as well. I mean, these are unfortunate circumstances. I mean, none of us ever want to have to be in a circumstance where we are having to get a court order control, if you will, or put some safeguards around our loved one. Most elderly folks, or folks with mental illness potentially, or folks who have some sort of breakdown in their life and need assistance, they will honor the conversation that they have with their loved one, and they will take their medication and they'll stay at home and they won't necessarily, you know, wander off. They'll try to do everything they can do to cooperate. Thank goodness it's that way.
Mm-hmm.
But like everything in the law, there are those great exceptions to the rule, and we actually have a lot of files in this area where, notwithstanding the greatest of love and affection between the principal, the elder person, and their child and or grandchildren, that there just simply, you know, is not that cooperation where the elder person is in a safe place. The test for this is, you know, are we at a place where either the property, meaning the resources of the ward, are in a position of being threatened, some harm to them? Are they being, depleted? Any of those kinds of things would be issues before the court. And with regard to their person, you know, are they taking care of themselves? Are they a significant risk to themselves by lack of medical treatment, lack of proper medical administration of medicine, actions in the home that are creating circumstances that are making them vulnerable physically and in a not safe environment? Those would be the kind of facts that would be put before the court, and then the court would make a decision as to whether or not there needs to be a guardian of the person so as to protect the safety of the person, or does there need to be a guardian of the property so as to protect the integrity of the property, the monies, the bank accounts, the land, and or does there just need to be a guardian of both the property and the person of the ward?
You know, several questions come to mind as we talk about this, and we're talking about, you know, a guardian for a principal, a elderly parent, and perhaps the family is spread out around the country. Maybe there's three daughters of this principal who act as agents, or one act as an agent, and they share mom half of the year. One goes to their home state, and mom stays back here in North Carolina for the other 6 months. Does a guardianship cross state lines? In other words, when you go through the North Carolina courts here for guardianship, and perhaps maybe you go to South Carolina, mom goes to South Carolina for 6 months out of the year, does that cross state lines, or do they have to do the same thing down there?
Well, if there has been an order of guardianship in North Carolina, for instance, and it's in effect, and we're operating under that order, then when we then are, you know, or visiting, you know, passing through a different state, the full faith and credit would apply that the guardianship of the person in North Carolina, their court order in North Carolina, would still be effective.
Okay.
Now, if the person moves their residency completely, their residency, and moves out of North Carolina and moves completely to be with the child, and we have this happen, you know, in Florida or Virginia or wherever the case might be, then at that point there would need to be an adoption of the guardianship order in that particular state.
Okay. That's good to point out there. So you need
so it depends on whether or not the sojourning is permanent in nature or just temporary.
Just transient. Okay.
Visitation, you know, then we're going to be okay.
Very good. Let's hold our thoughts on that point there. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation with Cecil Harvell. We're talking about guardianship, and we're unpacking that very weighty topic. Now, if you'd like to have a conversation with Harvell and Collins, Cecil Harvell or Wes Collins, call 252-726-9050. You can also go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell. We're talking about guardianship. And Cecil, we're going to take it to the top of the hour. We have about 10 minutes left.
Sure. One of the other aspects or details of the guardianship is that after there is an order of the court that appoints the guardian and, of course, makes them in charge of their property, then the bottom line is there's going to be some initial inventories that are filed to show the clerk of court exactly what the assets of the individual happen to be. And then there will be required an annual accounting to show the court, these are what the assets were at the beginning of the year, these were the expenditures that were expended during the year, and this, of course, is now what is left. Mm-hmm. If there's any dramatic movement in the assets, like maybe the guardian feels that they need to sell a property or to sell some significant asset, then they are going to need to make a motion with the clerk to approve that. The day-to-day expenses, upkeep, medical care, nursing care, anything of that nature is going to be considered to be routine, and it will just be audited on an annual basis. But if for some reason there's something very, you know, more significant that needs to be done, and the one that comes to mind is mostly the sale of real property.
Sure.
Then the clerk is going to want to check in with the guardian and want to know, you know, why do we think we need to sell it? What are the expenses? Show me kind of the big picture here, the global picture as to why this is in the best interest of your loved one. That's always going to be the guiding light. What is in the best interest of the ward?
Mm-hmm. Is there ever a circumstance or have you seen situations in which a guardianship is established? A daughter takes care of the elderly mother, the principal, uh-huh. and the agent. Is there ever a point when the guardianship is removed, is dropped?
Oh, yes, there are. Usually those are in circumstances where someone has maybe been in an accident. there's been, a temporary, maybe, 6 months, 12 months, something like that, where there's needed to be recovery, and the assets or person have needed, some very tight controls. And then wonderfully they get better.
Yes.
Or they improve. They're able to go home after their rehab, whatever the case might be, and then the guardianship can be extinguished.
Okay.
Or can be, basically the way we put it is there would be a restoration, mm-hmm. and a rescission of the guardianship.
Is it a costly endeavor, legal fees aside, to petition the court and go through the whole court process? Are we talking about a lot of money for this?
I think we are. As you can tell from some of the details that I've been addressing this week, and we addressed some last week, this is a hearing before the clerk. Sometimes witnesses have to be subpoenaed.
Mm-hmm.
That sometimes documents have to be gathered. It can be very time intensive for the lawyers that are involved. Also, sometimes these cases, I haven't mentioned it a lot, but that they are contested. There's controversy with regard to the order.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's something that maybe even the principal has issues with having a guardianship, if you will, against them, and they hire their own lawyer, and it is a contested guardianship. So. It can get involved, and of course, unfortunately, the more involved things become, the more expensive they can become.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see where, we're looking at this kind of through an Ozzie and Harriet way. You got mom and one agent, one daughter, but you could have extended families. You could have several siblings, not all of whom are on the same page. You could have first and second marriages too, and all that playing into how best to take care of the principal. And they all have their different game plans. So yeah, I can see how that might get a little sticky, in the proceedings.
Correct. Exactly.
Very good.
And yet on the other hand, even though some of the very facts that we've talked about can apply, and we've seen them apply, at times it can be very straightforward. Maybe the person just never had a power of attorney, and now the son or daughter, for whatever reason, are needing to access the account and are unable to. And so they need a guardianship for that reason.
I think it's interesting, too. When we first opened this box and started talking about guardianship, you kind of think of it in the sense of the elderly parent diminishing their capacity to live day to day on their own and needing somebody to help them. But as you pointed out, accidents can happen in an instant, a fall, a break of a hip, a neurological, a stroke, or just a car wreck or something like that when you need immediate oversight. So guardianship plays a lot of different roles, not just for the elderly person with diminishing capacity year over year. It can happen today.
Well, it can. And also, we do have these files where, not elderly people, but, younger 30-year-old, 40-year-old or whatever, have, very significant issues. Due to whatever the case might be. Maybe there's been some drug addiction. Maybe there's been some mental illness, all of which are, tragic circumstances. But for whatever reason, they're unable to take care of themselves. They're unable to take care of their affairs. So mm-hmm. as you can see now, Mike, from these 2 weeks, that's why we brought up this subject of guardianship. And guardianship law, it really can be quite broad and can come at us from, all sorts of different angles and all sorts of different factual scenarios.
Yeah.
All the way from the elderly down to just someone who has been in a tragic accident and everything in between.
Yeah, and I'm wondering too, you know, the age in which we live with the all the technology and social media platforms out there, children can be overnight sensations on TikTok, for instance, and become influencers and catch a windfall of money, but they might be minors, 10, 11 years of age, and all of a sudden this money's thrown their way. That would be the situation in which they would need some guardianship in order to, you know, safeguard that windfall that they just received off of their off their skill on social media.
That's a nice twist, but now that's a little bit different, Mike, because that's basically a guardianship for the benefit of a minor.
Okay.
The standards are going to be very, very different there.
Okay.
I mean, we recognize in the state of North Carolina, and I know we're about out of time, but that a minor is just simply unable to potentially have the ability to care for their property, you know, at 15, 16, mm-hmm. 14, 17, whatever the age might be, as long as the minor, even an infant, sometimes will inherit monies. And there has to be a guardianship for the benefit of the minor. And yes, it does still use the word guardianship. That would be a category of guardianship. But the standard is very, very different than the standard that we've kind of been talking about, where someone is unable to take care of themselves or take care of their property.
In the 2 minutes or so we have remaining, Cecil, and we've talked about this topic for the last 2 weeks. What are the top three or so takeaways you hope listeners got from this this very important discussion?
Well, first of all, try to avoid this expense and this delay. Number one, by having your loved one have a well-drafted power of attorney. Let's start there.
Okay.
Number two is that if that's not working for whatever reason, then you do need to know that this avenue is out there. Some people struggle for a long, long time with these issues of the principal not conforming, if you will, before they finally seek some legal advice. And it's very, very tough on these children and or grandchildren who are taking care of their loved one, and yet under circumstances where they, you know, are at risk. Don't allow that to just continue. There is an avenue here for a way in which you can get some relief from that. Those would be the top two things that come to mind. Always, as we just finished out the program this week, you know, Mike, we talk about this all the time. Just go talk to your lawyer. Seek the legal advice. Sit down for an hour and see what, if anything, can be done for you. And this is with regard to really any issue in your life. If you don't ask the questions, you can't begin to get the answers.
Yeah, and if you don't have a plan in place, you're going to get lost rather quickly as well. So great topic, and as you said, initiate the conversation, because life marches on, and you know, these situations, if you're in it, will not go away, and get the legal advice. And the way to do that is to call Harvell and Collins today, 252-726-9050. You can also go online to harvellandcollins.com, but start that conversation today with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. 252-726-9050.